Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. This is episode number 120. I'm your host, Clint Wyckoff. With me today, I have the distinguished pleasure of being, joined by Matt McSpirit, technical evangelist all the way from Redmond, Washington. He works for Microsoft. Matt, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. Long time no speak.
I know it's been a while, but hey, thanks a lot.
I'm doing well, though. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me on. Oh, you've got a lot of shows in your 100 and over 100 shows. Wow.
Yeah, 120. And the regular host, so I've been kind of taking on a lot of these podcasts, but my colleague on the evangelist team, Rick Vanover, kind of owns the Veeam Community Podcast, and I've been trying to help him out with different things along the way. So we really appreciate your time.
No, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. So, you know, we just got off the webinar that we did on Redmond Partner Channel with 1105 Media talking all about Hyper-V 2016. There's a lot of buzz in the industry, a lot of things going around. You know, kind of what are you hearing from folks? There seems to be a ton of interest of what's coming in Windows Server 2016, especially around Hyper-V.
Yeah, especially Hyper-V. I think if you look at all of the features on paper across Hyper-V, across storage, networking, across all of the other things, I think if I was, and I'm biased, obviously, but there's quite a few features in Hyper-V that are real headline things. Like the security features, like shielded VMs, are very, very important to a lot of organizations, especially service providers and larger enterprises. There's just a lot in there. Like containers are a completely new parallel for virtual machines. They're a new opportunity for operations teams and IT to integrate more with their developers and kick off the relationship again and get it going. And then you think about Nano as a new deployment option. So I don't ever think there's been so much new to learn for an IT professional as there is in 2016, which is a good thing and a bad thing. We all like to further our careers and carry on learning. But if you think 2012 R2, there was kind of new cool stuff, but it was familiar. Whereas right. Nano, brand new, containers, brand new. So yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff, a lot of great virtualization stuff going on, and yeah, overall it's just looking really good.
Awesome, yeah, and I mean there's definitely, like you said, there's a lot that's changing in the landscape. And probably, what do you think the best way that folks can kind of learn about what's coming in Hyper-V, other than listening to our podcast and watching our video recordings and things that we do? You know, MVA is a great place for folks to learn about a lot of the new features that are coming in Hyper-V 2016.
Yeah, you're right. There's an MVA course, both a broad Windows Server 2016 course, which covers all of the things like storage and networking and PowerShell, DSC. You know, there's lots of things that I think are very, very important for IT professionals to know. But if you want to very laser focus in on Hyper-V specifically, there's a virtualization deep dive that myself and Ben Armstrong did, and it was recorded a while back, so probably TP3 timeframe, but
right.
Maybe subtleties that are slightly different, perhaps the command to launch a container or the how to deploy an image with Nano, but for the most part, the information is still very, very relevant. And there's an accompanying course for Nano Server as well with similar recommendation around how new the information is. It's still relevant. There might just be subtle changes that you need to appreciate.
Yeah, so one of the ways that folks can go out and learn about is we talked about aka.ms/MVA, which is the Microsoft Virtual Academy, and you can do a search there for the course that Matt was speaking about. But also, you know, a great way is to go out and actually download Technical Preview 5 of Windows Server 2016, and you get that through the TechNet Eval Center, right, Matt? Mm-hmm.
Yep, you can grab it from there. I mean, if you just do a search in your favorite search engine, which we know is Bing, you can very easily find the technical preview. And currently it's TP5. I'm not sure whether we will have another or not going forward, but if you want to play with it today, download TP5. That's going to give you the best experience of available 2016 builds.
Absolutely. So, you know, one of the first things that we talked about today inside of our webinar that we did was all about security. That's a huge piece of the Windows Server 2016 and Hyper-V story, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It's if you think about CEOs' priority list for spend based on things that are happening in the industry around cyber attacks, ransomware, malicious attacks, whatever it may be, to big companies that you would assume have very high levels of security, and yet they're still being hacked, for want of a better term. Security is high on the list of agenda items for many, many CIOs, CTOs, and so on. So the stuff that we've built in Windows Server 2016 around helping you harden the fabric, harden that administration layer through some of the new PowerShell capabilities, generally reduce the attack surface of the platform as well. It's all very, very beneficial for IT professionals and IT admins out there.
Yeah, because we kind of have to change the way that security is being thought of, right? We're assuming, at least in previous kind of legacy security worlds, right, we were trying to keep people out. We were trying to build a really deep moat, build up the fence, build up the walls, and not let in the malicious hackers and let the folks in from the outside. We were trying to keep them out. You know, as you mentioned, in a lot of the things that Microsoft is preaching around security is assuming that they're going to get in. But how can we minimize the spread once they're inside of the environment? And that's really where, you know, BitLocker, shielded virtual machines, virtual TPM or trusted platform modules inside of the guest VM really come into play to protect those virtualized workloads. But then also, you know, one of the key areas that you folks talk about kind of seeing as an area for compromise is the administrator itself. Can you talk about, for our audience, maybe they might not be familiar, different ways that the admin credentials and things like that are being protected, not only a Windows Server, but, you know, the endpoint devices with Windows 10 as well?
Yeah, it's a good point. And to give a bit of extra context, we're not obviously pitching that administrators are bad and they're a risk, but the administrative account itself, by its very nature, is all powerful. So if that gets compromised, either maliciously by something hacking into the system and getting control of your account, or you've had a bad week, maybe, you know, things haven't gone so well at work and you think I could compromise the system. It's happened. We want to make sure that we're providing tools within the environment to help protect against that. So built into the OS in Windows 10 and Windows Server is something called Credential Guard, which you may have known as virtualization-based security. They're using our knowledge and experience with Hyper-V technology to create almost like essentially an isolated, very secure, very, very, very secure area of the operating system where we store things like important credentials and important information that we want to protect from less than nice people or nice attacks, shall we say.
Right.
We want to put that in place so that domain creds and those kind of those credentials stay intact, they stay non-compromised, and we protect against things like pass the hash and pass the ticket attacks. In addition to that, we've taken a thought leadership position on how we can help the administrator, who is all powerful, perhaps not necessarily need to use that immense power that they have within the environment all of the time. Because if you think about it, when I'm administering stuff in my lab, I don't necessarily need to be the admin 24/7. I can be it for 30 minutes to do this task and then relinquish that privilege for the rest of the time. And it means that by doing that, any attack or any compromise doesn't have the impact that it would have if I was just 100% admin 100% of the time. So these two capabilities are PowerShell-based capabilities known as just-in-time administration, so the time window that I was talking about, and just-enough. So how much privilege do I really need? And some of that you can achieve, I think, historically. For instance, always creating user accounts with the right level of privilege. But when it's the administrator account, you are the admin. So thinking about those different tiers of privilege within the account as well. But again, from a PowerShell perspective, and there's loads of good insight on TechNet that can help you learn a bit more about that.
Yeah, and I was actually at a security conference, my colleague Rick and I, earlier this year, called the Atlantic Security Conference. It was in the Halifax, Nova Scotia, believe it or not. But we were talking about a session there about securing your backups and things. But one of the most commonly overlooked pieces, the most obvious ones, by going, you know, I think one of the things that folks traditionally overlook is, you know, going out and looking in the domain admins group and seeing who's in there, right? Who has domain administrator credentials? Do you have service accounts? Do you have administrator accounts? You know, admin-mcspirit, admin-clint, as opposed to putting in, you know, Matt into the domain admins group. I just think it's the little things that folks can kind of look at to help secure the environment that are definitely probably the most commonly overlooked.
Yeah, I agree. And in a lot of environments, particularly where there's not a huge IT dedicated staff or security specialists, what we find is that security equals anti-malware, security equals firewall. And that's the perimeter, that's the defense line. Whereas in reality, there are extra ways to enhance security, like what we talked about with stuff that's built in the OS, which you don't really need to do a lot about. You know, it's just there and it can help you, and you can benefit from it significantly. There's stuff that you can implement at the user level, like we talked about with just in time and just enough admin, if you are a PowerShell and PowerShell workflow user. And then there's other things in the OS now in 2016 and server, like you touched on before, like shielded VMs that can help to harden the fabric. And then beyond that, should a breach happen or should you be being attacked, there are management tools that surround the infrastructure that help offer a significant level of insight into where you're being attacked from, in what form, is it malicious, and so on. And that's tools like the Operations Management Suite and the new security and audit solution within there that Microsoft is bringing to market.
Right. So not only is security important, you know, we talked a lot about, you know, NanoServer in the industry is getting a lot of buzz. You know, maybe some of the folks have heard about Nano, haven't really done any research about it. You know, just maybe just in a few minutes there, why don't we talk about NanoServer and, you know, what are some of the challenges that it is trying to solve?
So NanoServer, to be clear, is a deployment option of Windows Server. It's not a license, not a new version of Windows Server. It's core Windows Server that you deploy. It's an option for deployment. And what it's aiming to solve is some of those key challenges that people face deploying traditional Windows Server is reboots. So reboots impact business, less so perhaps with live migration, because you can move around virtual machines off physical hosts even when there's a reboot. So downtime is reduced. But in the guests, if you're following and adhering to patching, you're still going to need to reboot guests. So anything we can do to reduce that is a good thing. So you think about reboots, you think about size, you think about ports that are open, attack surface, all of those different things contribute towards what we can build on for NanoServer to provide solutions for those. So those are some of the challenges that our customers face. NanoServer addresses all of those. It's a very small footprint. When we say small, we're talking starting off at 150 meg as the base, and then when you add packages, and that's a key change in the way you manage and deploy NanoServer, is you don't just deploy it and then go into Server Manager and tick roles and features and add everything. You add them as packages, very similarly to how the Linux community will add packages from a known source to their distributions to make it be a web server or make it be a virtualization host. Same kind of thing for Nano. Add the Hyper-V package, add the clustering package, and so on. And that obviously increases the size slightly.
Right.
You go forward, the more you add, the more the greater the size. But fundamentally, you just add what you need. This is going to be a Hyper-V host image. Okay, build, deploy. This is going to be a web server image. Build, deploy. The two will be different in size because they'll be using different packages. So we start with the minimal footprint, add what you need, and then manage remotely because it is a headless x64 deployment option only. So you manage from familiar tools like Server Manager or MMCs like Hyper-V Manager if you've deployed a Hyper-V Nano, Cluster Manager and the like, or our new server management tools that exist in Azure and System Center and so on as we go forward as well.
Right, right. A lot of options. No, I mean, there's a lot of buzz. There's a lot of industry interest in NanoServer. You know, I've done quite a few sessions being an MVP over the course of the last 6 or so months since we've been really chatting about NanoServer publicly, and had access to a technical preview to actually go out and show it. You know, it's definitely different. And folks, if you're not already familiar with Server Core, you're definitely going to think that NanoServer is a huge change because, like Matt said, right, I can't remote desktop to a NanoServer. It only has the roles, the features, the functionality that are required to serve the purpose of that server. And the main use cases for NanoServer in Server 2016 are around cloud applications. So Hyper-V host, a container host, a storage server, you know, whether that be a scale-out file server or Storage Spaces Direct, right? Those are all supported configurations on Nano.
Yep, that's right. And you can categorize them into two buckets. So you've got what we call cloud infrastructure. So like you said, the Hyper-V host, the clustering, the storage, so that foundation. And customers who are used to perhaps the other virtualization player in the market, they're used to very small footprint, They're used to running it on things like SD cards or USB sticks inside chassis on servers. But ultimately, they're used to, perhaps more specifically, very headless, remote management, fast deployment, deployment across the network, and so on. Nano is that kind of approach as well. And even if you read the TechNet documentation very closely, you'll even notice references to things like RAM disks, so Nano in RAM. Not that we've provided any documentation on it at all, or at least what I've seen. It's kind of like a surprise. I'm thinking, this sounds interesting. So I need to get more info on that. But that's cloud infrastructure, so Hyper-V and storage. And then, as you rightly pointed out, for applications, think about this as not necessarily porting all of your existing monolithic applications, taking an Exchange server and making it run on Nano. We're thinking about the next generation of born-in-the-cloud applications, modern applications that utilize the APEX format for deployment, but also they'll run, like we see the kind of apps that are deploying to PaaS platforms in Azure or in containers. It's less about I need to make my version of existing app work on Nano and more about apps for the future. But that's not to say that you can't run existing apps on Nano if you want to. It just depends on whether the dependencies of that app are in Nano and whether the frameworks and so on. And you can't use MSIs either. So there will be a little bit of a time where apps will be either modified, converted, re-engineered, whatever it may be, to run on Nano. But if you build for Nano, it will work on the other version. Build for full GUI version of Windows Server won't necessarily work on Nano.
Full GUI version. People should be deploying at least core for, I would say, 90%+ of the use cases out there, right? Do you really need a full desktop?
Sometimes it just comes down to convenience and that comfort. You know, I'm guilty of it in my lab. It's easy for me to just deploy a full server, and I can, if I need to go to that server, I can easily remote desktop, easily go to Event Viewer and troubleshoot if I need to. And it's that sometimes it's that kind of approach in businesses as well, where it's easier for me to manage and maintain. And Windows, let's be clear, that Nano Server, whilst it offers a reduced attack surface and inherently therefore a little bit more secure, Windows Server on the whole is still a very secure operating system, regardless of which format you deploy. So that's not to say that you're compromising necessarily by choosing the desktop experience. And some people just find it that bit more convenient. And we did have that kind of time where you could trim out the GUI with
right.
So you could start with GUI, trim it out when you finish doing what you need to do. So yeah, you've got options for sure, but Nano is certainly a step further down the line of ideal in what we feel a server operating system should be. And certainly reflective of what Linux has been doing for some time. But it will take people time to get there, and the comfort factor as well.
Yeah, and I know, at least in my lab environment, I've been forcing myself for, I would say, the better part of the last year to use Core for pretty much everything. I mean, it's been a cognizant effort. Okay, I'm not going to deploy the full desktop experience. I'm going to deploy Core. And it takes a little bit of time to get used to, and it is a challenge at first, but definitely something that IT pros and administrators, you know, should at least begin to familiarize themselves with if they have not already.
Sometimes it's the ecosystem. Sometimes, for instance, when we first came with Server Core and there were specific NIC drivers and utilities that wouldn't install on the Server Core, and the same will probably apply for Nano. There'll be a period of time where somebody can't go to Nano because of reason X. So it's Microsoft, you're introducing a new deployment option. That's a challenge for customers and partners alike. But once the ecosystem rolls with it and we all collectively start making that journey together, for want of a really cheesy phrase, it will work for the customer then. But if we just give the customer the bits and say, well, there's the Windows server bits, Nano, go, you know, knock yourself out. You need to go to vendor X for this driver. They may or may not have it. For Nano, it's not really telling the right story that we want to tell. So we appreciate that it may take that bit longer.
Right. No, that's great. And so, you know, we talked about Nano. One of the great use cases is containers. Microsoft's doing a lot around containers, Windows containers. You know, Docker containers as a framework is fully supported to manage those either Windows or Linux containers, Hyper-V containers. There's a lot of investment that Microsoft's doing to make these kind of write once, deploy anywhere, on-prem, off-prem applications, platform as a service. You know, I've heard Jeffrey say it probably 150 times, the born in the cloud, you know, right? That's kind of the way that everything's going. Anything, you know, what are you hearing inside of Microsoft? What are you hearing from your customers and partners that you chat with?
Well, I was actually at DockerCon yesterday, so talking with a variety of people about containers, and the ecosystem is just booming.
It is.
And so there was a statistic I read on the escalators as I was going up the escalator to the main conference area, and it was, I think, was it a year or 2 years ago? There was something like a 1.8 million or not, in the millions of containers deployed, and now it's 4.1 billion containers.
Wow.
It's a time. So you see the growth, and it's not necessarily just Microsoft is, I suppose, contributing a little bit because now we have Windows Server containers, but containers have been around for a long, long time in the Linux world, and Docker really took that container technology and said, look, you know, we need to provide a way to more efficiently manage, automate, scale, run, deploy, all of the key elements of an enterprise lifecycle for containers. And they did it. And they're delivering release on release, new capabilities, new advanced features. And now we have a really strong partnership. We were actually a platinum sponsor of DockerCon yesterday and the day before for the conference. And we've got great investments together to make Windows Server containers and subsequently Hyper-V containers a great option, especially for .NET applications, .NET developers, and so on. So harnessing Docker's expertise and their guidance and working with them with our engineering efforts on the platform, we really deliver a solution that for app developers gives them a new angle on how quickly they can deploy, manage, run, build applications as part of their lifecycle. And it's a big change for virtualization people. So I imagine most of your listeners and viewers,
right,
your virtualization admins who are used to going new VM, four procs, X amount of virtual hard disk space, 20 gig of RAM, whatever it may be, deploy, install OS or from template, you know, the usual stuff that we all take for granted, live migrate a VM, fail it over, all of that cool stuff. And to go to containers, it's kind of like, okay, this is a thing that has a lifespan of potentially, I'm going to spin it up for an hour, then destroy it. It's stateless. It's all of these different approaches. I don't need to live migrate the container OS. What's a container host? Lots of new terminology to learn as well. And it's hard. It generates a lot of tension with IT professionals initially because they're so used to VMs. And the question is, well, is it instead of? Is it in addition to? All of these things come up. And we collectively, Microsoft and our partners, are trying now to answer those questions more effectively for people. And fortunately, we're doing a good job of helping people at least get started. And I think that's the important thing, is kicking the tires with containers. And don't think about it in the same vein as a VM. Treat it as something new that you learn. And yeah, you'll naturally make comparisons, but just treat it as a new technology that you can provide an environment for your developers to consume. That's ultimately what it is. It's very unlikely that you, if you're the traditional virtual machine storage networking infrastructure person, are going to be, you might deploy a container for somebody else, but it's unlikely that you're going to be using it for anything, because on its own, it's just an instantiation or a slice of an operating system that's designed to run an app.
Right.
Unless you've got an app to run in it, or you've got a dev to build an app to run in it, there's not much point for you. So it's certainly aimed at those developers harnessing that container technology, but you as IT have an incredibly important role to play to provide the foundation for the container infrastructure.
Right, and I think that's why it's important for our listeners and our viewers to understand that, you know, even though containers are necessarily related to more of a DevOps developer type perspective use case, you know, it's definitely worth their time in listening and learning and reading and making sure they're aware of, you know, kind of what a developer needs and wants and desires to deploy their applications and services, because that's what the business is all about and that's what the business runs on.
So, you're right, yeah. That's the fundamentals of DevOps, that right there is having that conversation and building that relationship between developers and operations within your environment.
Yep.
You can't do DevOps as dev never talking to ops. It just doesn't work. So if you do want to achieve a DevOps processes, methodologies, you're going to have to talk. You're going to have to work together and find unified technologies that can help you achieve that goal. And containers is certainly an enabler of that.
Mm-hmm.
Windows Server and all Linux containers managed by tools like Docker. And there are others like Mesos and others out there. And they're all open source for the most part. So you can certainly utilize those pretty effectively.
Awesome. So, Matt, let's cut to the chase here. All right, let's get straight to the million-dollar question that my viewers want to know. All right? You know what where I'm going with this, okay?
Yeah.
When do we anticipate Windows Server 2016?
Well, that's easy. It's out in...
I lost you there.
No, I think we've publicly stated that it will be in the second half of 2016. Okay. Are we quite there yet, would you say? 1st of July, maybe? The turning point of the second half. We're still in the first 6 months, I guess. But yeah, second half of the year. If you search hard enough online, I think for Windows Server 2016 release date, you might find people who are trying to second guess as to where and when it will land in that second half of the year. But mm-hmm. that's publicly stated at this time. But it's not miles away.
No. Understood. And working for a software vendor, I understand that, you know, there's a lot of moving parts, especially whenever you're writing an operating system.
Yeah.
You know, it's ready when it's ready.
Yeah, but the key thing is kick the tires, you know, technical previews.
Oh, yes.
We've taken that approach of rather than the old style of beta and then 6 to X number of months later, we'll do a release candidate and then we'll do a final release. These technical previews have been coming out pretty flexibly and regularly from, let's say, TP3 in November. There was TP4, I think, was it January? TP5 wasn't too long ago. So we're really trying to give new functionality, more stable releases, more enhanced releases, release on release, milestone on milestone. So don't be afraid to kick the tires. Yeah, don't run a production workload on it. But for these things that are brand new, like Nano, like containers, it doesn't matter whether it's the final release or whether it's TP5. You're going to want to understand whether it's the right thing for your business and whether you're going to take benefits. So it doesn't need to be the final release at this stage.
Yeah.
Kick the tires, try, evaluate with these milestone releases, and then wait for the final release and start to plan, because unless you plan your upgrades or plan your deployments, and especially if you're transitioning from regular server to Nano, and those kind of, they take time, and it's going to take you a few months to plan that, and before you know it, Windows Server 2016 will be with you and the accompanying management tools, and then sometime later down the line, Azure Stack probably.
Right. So just before we wrap it up here, because we're coming up on the bottom of the hour here, Matt, the big conference, right? Microsoft Ignite. Later this year, Atlanta, Georgia. Just a few weeks ago, you guys announced that the session builder was available to go out there for folks to start building and adding in, you know, sessions that they're most interested in.
Yep.
You know, if I'm attending Ignite, what should I be looking for? What are the hot sessions? What sessions are you delivering? Is Jeffrey going to be doing anything? Racinovich?
They'll be involved for sure. I'm actually exempt from Ignite because we're expecting our second child the week of October. So 4-hour flight to Atlanta plus travel time is just that bit too risky, I think, for my wife. Not for me, I'd do it, but my wife feels less enthused about that idea. But in turn, I'll be catching up online. Mm-hmm. So all the stuff is published online. It's a great time for Microsoft people to broaden their horizons on what they kind of focus on, laser focus day to day, and look at some of these surrounding solutions. But to answer your question specifically, obviously there's going to be a lot of Hyper-V sessions there. There's going to be a lot of stories, there's going to be a networking and so on. And everything we've talked about today will be covered in individual sessions. So shielded VMs, definitely worth checking out for security. There's going to be sessions on Operations Management Suite, definitely worth checking out, because it's certainly a future strategic direction for Microsoft in management, and it's going to be something that if you haven't evaluated today, you should certainly look at. A lot of people are talking about Azure Stack.
Yep.
Hyper-V and storage with software-defined storage and networking are the underpinnings of Azure Stack, but if you're thinking about how you can act as a service provider or deliver IT as a service to your enterprise, Azure Stack is the Azure consistent, truly consistent way that Microsoft is providing that on-premises within your environment. So definitely that'll be a great time to update yourself with information on Azure Stack. But again, it's hard because if you're an infrastructure guy today, or if you're the virtualization guy today, I expect your role will broaden in this future cloud admin type roles that we see appearing. So familiarizing yourself with more virtualization, but software-defined storage networking, so broadening across, and then the PaaS layers that sit on top through Azure Stack, containers, nano server, obviously, as well as a deployment option, you could spend more than a week learning about all of those. So, yeah, I think they're going to be my key recommendations.
Those are the ones to look out for sure.
Yeah, they're all going to be probably in the same track.
Yep.
So I would say anything within that track, I think it's the, I don't know if it's called the infrastructure track. We do a show called The Ops Team. I did call it out on that one. I think it was the infrastructure track. Start there. If you're a virtualization guy, start there and then look for those key names like Azure Stack, Nano, containers, and so on.
Awesome. Well, Matt, I'm going to wrap it up here. I really appreciate your time today. You know, we did the webinar on the Redmond. Now we're following up doing this podcast. Really awesome. We Veeam truly appreciates the partnership that not only that we have together from an evangelist perspective, but also that Microsoft has with its ecosystem partners. We absolutely cherish that relationship that we have with you guys. Super pumped to have you on the podcast today. I'll include your Twitter handle, which is
@MattMcSpirit.
All right, folks. So definitely want to drop Matt a tweet.
Oh, yeah, drop me a tweet. That's fine.
You can drop the twit a tweet.
That works as well.
All right, man. Hey, I will catch you around. Thanks a lot. We really appreciate it. And yeah, man.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. See you later.